The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to the Goodish Girls, guys. My name is Dallas, and I'll be your host today. And we are on another episode of Indie Talk. And as everyone knows on our social media and our platform, that the entire month of July we have dedicated to indie authors. So today I would like to welcome three fantastic independent authors, T.A. Riley, Rachel Stones, and Holly Davis. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, cheer for you.
Those are amazing. We here to spotlight you guys. And this is so exciting. So I'm super excited to get to know a little bit more about your books and have our listeners learn a little bit more about your books, and then also dive into what it's like to be an indie author and some specific tasks or struggles that maybe you guys have gone through during your indie author journey to hopefully help future independent authors when they're going on this journey. Each time I do one of these episodes, I learn a little bit more about what it takes to be an independent author. And I wish there was like maybe a book, right, that says like, here's everything you need to know about being an independent author. So hopefully these episodes will be helpful to others who are trying to go and follow their dreams and start this journey. So thank you guys for joining me today. I want to kind of jump into it and learn a little bit about your books and again, show our listeners about your books. So tell me a little bit about your book and maybe like an aha moment when you realized you wanted to write and or publish a book in the first place. So Holly, I do want to start with you. So tell me about how you kind of were like, I'm ready to be an author. I'm ready to jump in. And here's my story.
Yeah. So, my book is A Diamond Bright and Broken. I see it in the background. It's just really fun.
Oh, yeah, I see her. She's up there.
Yeah, she's so pretty. It's a YA fantasy romance. I pitch it as like a tangled retelling with a female Flynn Rider. And so there's disability rep with a wheelchair user. The main characters are biracial. It's a sapphic romance. So there's a lot of representation in the book. I started writing or like working on my first book, like when I was in college, and then I started working and kind of fell to the wayside. And then I revisited again in 2017 when I found NaNoWriMo, which is no longer. And I finished the first draft and I'm like, okay, cool. What do I do now? And so then I just researched on Google, like all about editing, the different publishing paths, what is querying, like there's a difference between developmental and line editing, all of that. So that just kind of immersed me in the world, was like, what next? I wrote quite a few other manuscripts before A Diamond Bright and Broken. And I wanted to be traditionally published because I saw how hard my friends and who were self-published was. I am published with a small press, but that still has its own difficulties because keyword small. So there is a lot of work that goes into it too. But yeah, so that's a little bit about my aha moment, was just like, what do I do now?
That's incredible. And we've had authors before who still consider themselves independent authors, but are with a small press, because even though you have that support, which is amazing, you still have to do most of the work that still goes into that. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. That was when I was like looking at the questions, I was like, oh yeah, there's just so much still that goes into like marketing promotion, just because it's a small press. And the one that I'm a part of has, I think it's been around for 3 years now, but my title was like the seventh title to release. So it was, it's like, you know, there's not a lot of budget, you know, so there is still a lot that like falls on me. So it, there is some support, but it still is a lot of work for myself. Like I'm looking for the, hey, look at this podcast opportunity. Look at this book signing event. And so it's a lot that I'm just trying to do to like still spread the word and get readers to, you know, find my book.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I can see like when I go online to look at your page, how hard you work on that.
I think
all three of you are doing a fantastic job. So I look at everybody's profiles. I look at all the things. I'm like snooping around everywhere. I'm like, who's this author?
You're so fun. That's so sweet.
It's true. I do. I creep on everybody. So Miss TA, tell us a little bit about your book and your journey. And also if you had an aha moment of like, I'm ready to be an author. I'm ready to write my own book and publish it.
Yeah. So I guess the book I'll talk about will be my one that you can kind of see here. This is Soul is Falling. So this one actually releases next week. But so, yeah, craziness. But it's kind of like a dystopian urban fantasy with like angels and spies is sort of the vibe. As for like an aha moment, I don't really know if I totally had one. Growing up, I was always writing. And then my dad actually was the one who was like, you know, you should write a book and publish it. And I kind of just looked at him. And I was like, haha, yeah, no, I don't think so. I was like, that's a lot of work. And just like over time, I realized that I was like, well, I really, really do like writing and reading. And so eventually in college, I just decided, I was like, you know what, I'm actually just going to try it. So I published my first book in the middle of grad school and planning a wedding. So,
wow.
You know, yeah, it was a big learning curve. But yeah,
that is incredible. I have planned, thankfully, only one wedding in my whole life. I don't ever want to do it again, but I could not imagine trying to write and or publish a book at the exact same time. So I don't know how you didn't lose your mind and lose your sanity.
Yeah. Incredible. I really don't know. So,
that is amazing. Rachel, how about you and your book? Hope Rises comes out in August. Yes, correct?
Yes, August 18th.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about it. And then did you have an aha moment in your life?
Okay, so Hope Rises is actually not the first one I wrote. And so my aha moment came with the first one that I actually wrote, but I haven't published yet. Because when I was creating that one, I decided like the better story is going to be the bigger series. And that's going to start with the daughter of the main character in my first book. And so because the first book is all set in like a 12-hour period, and it's only got like three characters in it. And so I wanted to have like a larger cast to be able to have people like fall in love with the world and the characters and the story and the magic system and be able to have more time to actually develop it and explain it. So I decided to make Hope Rises the first one I'll publish. And then I'll do the story about her mom a little bit later in the series. But my aha moment was we moved to North Carolina a couple years ago. And you know, when you move somewhere new and you have no friends, and I was just like, throwing myself into reading. I'm like, well, I got nothing else to do. I'm just going to read. And then my husband's like, well, you know, you had that idea about that story like 16 years ago and you used to talk about it all the time. And then life happened. You know, I had two kids. We kept moving around because like we were both in like kind of in the military, supporting military contracts. And I just never had time to sit down and write it. And now all of a sudden I had the time. And so I was like, all right. And then the aha moment where I was like, this could actually be something was when my best friend, she read the book and she called me and she goes, you have a moment? And I said, yeah. It's like, what's up? What's going on? And she's like, I just finished your book. And I'm like, you know, obviously the nerves are starting. I'm like, no, like what's happening? My husband's the only one that's read it. And he always just says everything I write is good. So like, I can't really trust his opinion. but then she's like, what the fuck? And when she said that, I was like, that's exactly what I was going for. So one, I did it. Like, so I got the feeling, the emotion I wanted. And then she was like, I hate this character. And she like said the person that you're supposed to hate. And I was like, yes, I did two things really well. Like, and so that's when I was like, I can actually write this book and like publish it. So then I started looking for editors and all and like figuring out like what Holly said, like what happens now? Like, what do I do? Like,
right.
So.
And we will see that you said that we will see that story that you have like tucked away and hidden in your computer.
Yes, I'm still tweaking that one. So that was the first one I actually sent to the developmental editor first while I was still like polishing up the third, fourth, fifth draft of Hope Rises that I'm actually publishing first. So she sent it back to me. She had all these things and I still haven't made all the adjustments I want to for that one. But I think it's probably going to come in between the main storyline. It'll be like a novella that just gets added in there. I think it's going to be between book 2 and 3 or 3 and 4.
I love novellas. I don't know why. I know some people are like, oh no, novellas. And I think it's because they expect like a giant book, especially when we're reading fantasy. But I love a good little like teeny story that is going to like make me happy. Or I guess you could have a novella that is like emotionally damaging too.
It's also kind of big. It's still 100,000 words. So.
Oh, really? Okay. Yes. So then here's a question for you as well, I guess, as from a reader standpoint, what makes it a novella? Because I thought it was the size of the book itself. So, to me, it's just because
it's like a standalone in between, like it's not part of the main series.
Interesting.
That's what I was calling it, but maybe I'm wrong. So I could be wrong.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm learning all these things every day. I learn something new about like publishing and books and all of that stuff. So also, I'm going to stick with you, Rachel, and then I'm going to move back to our other ladies here. So when you were writing and kind of building this world that your characters are in, was there a piece of world building that took longer to map out than you expected? Or was there like a piece of it where you were like, man, I'm kind of stuck on this, and then you had to maybe either switch directions in it or you had to push through it? How did you do that?
I think just to start, like getting, for some reason, like in my head, I was like, I had to start everything with a prologue. And so I wrote all these prologues, and every time I write a prologue, my developmental editor is like, no, get rid of it. I'm like, okay. And then I had a couple chapters that was diving into more of her history and things like that. And then I cut a lot of that out and like trying to just figure out like where to cut and like where to start, because you don't want to like make it too slow to get into the main story, because then you start losing people. And so I think that was probably the hardest thing for me. I'm definitely a discovery writer, so I don't really map things out too much. I have like the beginning, middle, end, and maybe a couple like side pieces that I want. And I just sit down and I write until I get to like, in this chapter, I want this. And then I just keep going until it's done. So like, and then after it's done, I send it to the developmental editor and she's like, no, take this out, add this and move this here. So like, but.
Do you feel like, yes, having an editor is very important. I have learned that over like my indie talk research and learning that kind of stuff. Do you feel like going through the editor was part of the challenge when you were writing these books? Not in a negative way necessarily, but like when you send it to them, you know that they're going to have feedback, which you want, right? Because we want to put out like a good edited story. But do you think that that was part of the process that was maybe a little bit more difficult than you had anticipated?
I mean, being the first time I've gone through this process, it was a little bit of a shock because, you know, my husband's like, it's great. And my friend's like, it's great. And then you get it back from the development editor and there's all these things that she's like, well, actually, like, we need to move this, we need to do that. And I think you have to process that for a little bit and like sit, take a couple of days. And that's what she said in the letter too. She's like, take a couple of days with the feedback. Don't just try to like come up with ideas like on the fly. She's like, sit with it, take a week, take 2 weeks, however long you want, and figure out which ones you're going to accept and which ones you're just going to throw out, because you don't have to accept everything that they tell you. And that's one of the great things about being an indie author instead of traditionally published with them. It's like, they tell you you have to change it, you're changing it, because they're the one that's paying for everything and like, you know, pushing it through and marketing it. But with as an indie author, it's still your story, so you can do what you want. And then just trying to figure out, well, how much do I take to make it still my story, but to make sure that I'm trying to put like the best story out there for the readers? Because obviously they have more experience with the editing, and they have they've been working with best-selling authors or whoever your editor is, and they know what they're doing. And I'm new, so I tried to accept most of everything she said, but I left a couple things in there that she wanted me to cut, and I was like, no, this is mine.
Yeah, and that's fair. Yeah, I have also learned that the ability to have control over your narrative and your story and your publish date and all of these things is something that a lot of traditionally published authors end up having to give up a lot of that control and that like coverage over it. So it's interesting. And I think that is something that makes being an indie author so special. Because when you're reading an independent, like an independently published book, you know that that is like solely from the author. There's not a lot of people behind the scenes that are making changes to that story. So Tia, I want to throw that question your way as well. So when you were building your book, when you were creating this story, was there certain things that were a struggle that you didn't anticipate or took longer to map out than you had anticipated? And then also, did you go with an editor or find that process difficult?
Yeah. So for kind of mapping it out, I think since this was like a standalone and it was a whole new world from my other series, which that one was kind of easier because it was just like after the first book, you had everything like mapped out. But this one, since it was a standalone, I kind of actually had to sit there and really like pick all the names and the magic system, the religious system, like everything. And I kind of like found that I forgot how much work it was when you actually had to create the whole world from scratch, since my past two releases were in part of a series. And so I was just able to kind of build off of that. And I was like, oh, wow, like I forgot how time consuming it is to find names for every little thing in the story. And like the road they're walking on, if you're mentioning it, it needs a name. The bar they're going to, like everything has to have a name. And I definitely like forgot that for a little while. So that was kind of like just to like hit me again. I was like, oh my gosh, forgot about this. And then as for my editor, I've worked with her for all four of my books. So we kind of have like a really good relationship now, just since it's been like 4 years of working together and, you know, editing and everything. So when she gives me like my feedback, I kind of like expected a lot of it. And actually, I left her like a 10-minute voice message before she even like looked at it. I was like, I could already tell you that I think you're going to come back and say like this, this, and this. This is what's bothering me right now in the story. Let me know if you have the same opinions. And when she got back to me, it was almost like exactly what I thought. I was like, yep, okay, we're pretty much on the same page here. I need to fix this, this, and this. But it's been really nice, like having the same editor for all of my books, because she picks up on my writing style, how I like to say things, the words that I like to repeat all the time or constantly misspell. So it's really nice to like kind of build that relationship.
So a follow-up question for that, is that normal for you to keep the same editor, or is it normal in the industry to go with different editors depending on what book you are like trying to put out into the world?
I don't know if there's like a normal or not. I had like a different editor for my first release. And then I actually got it like re-edited post-release because I had some changes that I wanted to make to it. And then I picked up with like my new editor. And then I didn't want to switch after that because it was a series. And she had the whole style guide for it, the pronunciation guide. She knew the world. And I just thought that like if you had even switched like in the middle of a series, it would have been so much work to like catch an editor up on the whole first book or, you know, the second book, which is part of the reason that I like stayed with her. And then we just built a really good relationship. So then I just kept giving her my books. So
yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right? If the relationship's good, keep it. That makes sense. I get that. So Holly, I also want to ask you the same question about your world building and difficulties that you maybe didn't anticipate happening. And then also your editing as well, which may be a little bit, might be a little bit different of a journey because you are with this small, like this small publishing firm that you're with. So tell me a little bit about your journey with that.
Yeah. So I had a very hard time trying to balance the like medicine, like the modern medicine that was kind of in the story versus it like being in a fantasy world and trying not to make it too modern. Because the main character, her sister, has a neuromuscular disorder. She uses crutches and a wheelchair, and she's seeing a doctor and a physio healer, which is kind of like a physical therapist. I'm a physical therapist by background. So I kind of wanted to include that representation because I'm like, you don't see a wheelchair user fighting in a like in a war. Like that needs to be in a book. But it was hard because a lot of people were like, oh, this pulled me out. So I'd be like describing like a stethoscope, like the tube with the piece at the end. And then my publisher is like, just say stethoscope because you're describing it and it's weird, you know. But so it was hard because I was like, oh, she's trying this new treatment. And in our world, it would be like some gene therapy or something. But I couldn't say that. So it was just like wording it where it made sense, but it didn't sound like they're just it because it's supposed to be more of like an epic fantasy. But it is because of the medicine, it became a little more modern. But yeah, just finding that balance was tough. And then with my editing process, I have the same editor for developmental, line, copy edits, proofreading, because it's my publisher, like the CEO or the creator, however she calls herself. She just does all of the edits. And so that, you know, is good because she is deep into the book and knows it. So we're editing the sequel right now. It's a duology. And so it's good because she's like, hey, this isn't consistent from the first book. Like we capitalized it there and now it's low. And I'm like, oh, yeah, great. So I'm just glad that she's picking up on all of that. that is like one good thing is that like I don't have to like go searching for the editor, but then also like I had my friend afterwards go through the book to make sure there weren't any mistakes, because they're like, well, yeah, now there's one person going through it all these times, you're gonna miss all of these things like I would if I was going through it, like blaring mistakes. So, you know, I did have my friend go through it too, and she did catch quite a few things because we're just, which is good. It means that, you know, it wasn't written or edited by AI, you know, because there's, if there's mistakes in the book, but obviously we want as the least amount as possible.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I read something the day from an author that said, if you find a mistake in a book, you have to, you can't judge it anymore because that word worked hard to be there. That mistake worked really hard. It went through many eyes. It went through many reads and it earned its right to be in the book. So you have to leave it alone. And I've never heard much like such truer words.
That's
I was
so
like, you know what? You're right. That's fair.
Good job. Good job, word.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you really worked hard to like get past all of these people that have been reading this book.
So I kind of want to jump into a little bit different of a topic, and that is bookish events and bookish markets, or markets in general that maybe you are finding yourselves at. Has everyone been to like or promoted their book at a bookish market yet?
No. I have my first one.
Amazing. So. Yeah, no, this is good. This is good. I love this because I would like to see both perspectives, right? I would like to see what it's like to be at a bookish event, how you plan, how you decide how many books you're going to bring, right? Do you, like, how does that all work? And then what are you feeling before you go, especially if you're going to your first one? How did you pick that one? So TA, I'd like to start with you on this. So how many bookish events have you been to, and kind of how did you prep for that, and how did you pick them? And especially in this day and age that we have, where a lot of bookish markets that I'm seeing or these bookish events are not following through on their word. And I think that impacts indie authors more than anything else. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I'm actually, I do quite a lot of events. I usually try to have at least one a month, if not more than that. And at the beginning, kind of when I was really just starting out, and I just had like one to two books out, I took anything that I could get into, like any event that would have me. I was like, I'm going. I like, this is what I want to do. And now, especially with everything that's kind of going on with bookish events and past events that I have attended, I've kind of narrowed down my selection. And so I like to try to pick like specific like fantasy and fantasy like romance type of events, because I find that that sort of works best. Like, I get the most readers that are actually going to be interested in my book. And then lately, I've also been only choosing to do established events. So if it's a newer event, I'm a bit more hesitant until they've kind of been out for a year or so, and like seen how it's gone in the past. So I've really kind of aimed to go toward more established events and just more in my genre to really reach the right readers. And then I do pre-orders for all like big conventions. So that kind of helps me like gauge how many books I'm going to need, because I usually bring like at least double what my pre-orders are. But it's a gamble at any event. I have gone to like small local events where I didn't think that I was going to sell that many. And I've sold like hundreds of books and like been taking orders on paper because like my system broke down. And then I've gone to like huge events that I thought I was going to do really well, and my numbers are like equivalent to a local event that I could have done for a cheaper price because I wouldn't have had to pay huge table fees. So it's really hit or miss. And I just always say like, I would rather go to an event and bring too many books and not sell out, because then I know I can always be selling at the event. That's just kind of like my take. Like, I know some people get really excited to sell out, which is always great. But I'm like, I would rather not sell out and keep being able to sell to readers and have more readers get their hands on my books. So,
and when you don't sell out, or you have these extra books, you can maybe, you have other options for that, right? Like, you could put them on your website or things like that. Or are those books like, now they just chill at your house and they have nowhere to go?
I mean, they do chill at my house, but I do put them up on my website.
Not forever.
Yeah. They're up on my website, my TikTok shop, and then they're just brought to the next event that I have.
Okay.
So
yeah.
It's kind of just, they like roll over. So it always works. You have a lot of books. That's like my new release. We ordered like 450 copies, and I'm just staring at like all these boxes, and I'm like, this is exciting. So many books to give out.
So. Yeah, that's a lot of books.
Yes.
That's really exciting. And what are some bookish events, like maybe like one or two or three, if you have it, that you would recommend for an indie author to start with, like established ones that maybe either travel or that you know for sure are worth it?
Imaginarium in Washington, D.C., hands down, an amazing event. I've done it 2 years in a row. Loved it. Also doing Villains and Vixens this year, and the organizer is absolutely amazing. And the same with Books, Gowns, and Crowns, which is out in California this year. She's also amazing at organizing events, a really great reputable event too. So
yeah, those all sound like really good ones. Holly, I want to go over to you really quick before we go back to Rachel. So tell me about your like bookish event journey and kind of what your thought process is before you go to an event and how you choose an event.
Yeah. So, you know, with having just one book, when that came out, I was like, okay, let's be local. Let's do things in my area. So I went to a local author fair that was part of my library. And from there, I talked to my like table mate, and she's like, hey, there's an author fest that's in the summer. So it was kind of cool. I learned about these different events from the other authors attending. And so I did that author fest last year. I'm actually doing it this Saturday too. Hopefully it's not going to be rained out because it's outside. If not, it's going to be 90 degrees. So either extreme heat or rain. So we'll see about the outdoor events. Has its own, difficulties, but I really enjoyed it. And then last year, then I did do my first like book con. It was the Harvest Book Con in Chicago. I'm in the Chicagoland area. And so with my sequel, I thought it was going to be out actually in a month, but we had pushed it to early 2027. But I had preemptively like signed up for all of these events in the fall. So now I've got like one in September, October, November. So pretty much I just went online. And if I did see any author friends or any authors I followed on Instagram, like post about an event they were going to, then I checked it out. Hey, like, is it still time for me to sign up for this? Or maybe I can get on the newsletter or wait list so that I can, you know, be eligible to sign up for next year. Cause that's what happens a lot when I'm searching. I'm like, oh, this is already closed because it's, you know, they're booked a year or two out sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, oh, you need at least two titles. I only have one. So I kind of keep things in my pocket to look at for the future. Imaginarium was one of them. So I'm excited to know that that one is a good one. But yeah, so I tried to branch out after my first year of dipping my toes in the water. So now I'm doing, in the fall, I'm doing Books by the Arch, which is in St. Louis, and then Books in the Desert, which is in Phoenix, Arizona, where my sister is. So I have an excuse to visit her. I was still trying to do things that are accessible to me and then maybe branch out and spread my wings a little bit more when I have more books under my belt and feel like, you know, maybe I can make that table feedback, because that's a thing to look at too, is like, okay, that's $40 and not $400, you know? So right. That's how I kind of picked and chose that as well.
You mentioned something that I have never heard before, and you said that some events need you to have more than one title. That's a thing?
Yes. And
why is that a thing?
What's the one, I'm trying to think, what's the one hosted by Jennifer L. Armentrout?
A PolyCon.
Yes. I think that one is you need two titles. That might be the only one, but I know I'm always on the lookout for their criteria, because I'm like, oh, I am going to have two titles out by the time the con happens. Mm-hmm. But they say you need to have two titles out when you apply. So it's like very specific. And I'm like, shoot, but it's going to be out. So
interesting.
You know, yeah. So you have to look at the guidelines and just be sure.
Okay. Yeah. So as you're working on going to maybe some of your first bigger events, definitely check out the guidelines, see what they are requiring.
Yes.
I can't get over that. That's wild. I don't know. I'm sure there's a reason. I'm sure that there's like a thing or some thought process or something. I don't understand it, but
maybe it's just because it's so big, they have so many people apply. So they have to have some sort of filter to decrease the volume of applications that they get. And that's the best way they could think to do that. That's all that I can.
That's so interesting. Guess.
Yeah.
Wild. Okay. Well, now we know, right? Like that, I feel like that's something that maybe not a lot of indie authors are aware of as they're looking for these events. Yeah. Right. Rachel's just like, hold on. Now she knows. So Rachel, you're getting ready to go to your very first event. What event did you choose? Like, where are you going to be at? And then why did you choose that one? And how do you know how many books you're going to be bringing?
Yes. So Moonfire Realms is what it's called. It's kind of near my house. So another author that I just met recently, we kind of started getting together and going to coffee shops or wine bars and starting writing together. And she was like, oh, I'm going to this event in September. And I was like, really? And so I looked it up and they still had the application open. So I applied. And since it was only like 20, 30 miles from my house, I was like, it's not going to be like a huge cost to go there. The table fee was pretty low. And they accepted me. So I was like, so those are like the criteria there. Like, can I get accepted? And then after that, I was like, well, how many others should I apply for? So I started applying to a couple in North Carolina because that's where I'm based out of. And I... still waiting to hear on two, but I got accepted to two others. Another one earlier September and then one in October, or not earlier, but two in October. So one early October and then one on Halloween. So that'll be fun. So I'll have to dress up for that and figure out what kind of candy I'm going to hand out.
That's so exciting. I can't wait to see like how your event goes.
Yeah, me too. Like, and there's a gala afterwards. And so I had to buy a dress. Oh. And like,
I do love a nice gala after an event. And how do you know, like, how are you deciding how many books you're going to be bringing to that?
So I looked it up. So I Googled and I was like, well, how many? I was like, well, if it's a small event, which this one I think would be considered small because it's only the second or third year. And I think they accept about 12 authors and they have other vendors for like fantasy items. They actually do a Dungeons and Dragons session, like two of them. And so I'm going to bring my boys and they're going to do that. So while I'm selling books, hopefully they'll be doing Dungeons and Dragons and learning how to play that game. So, and then my husband and I will go to the gala at night. So, but I think I'm going to bring about 40 books. And I don't know, like maybe TA and Holly can tell me if that's like too little, too much. Like it's, I don't know.
No, it's good.
What do you think?
My stock is at the top there. That's like, I bought those last year and then I had a lot and I've just been whittling them down. So it's kind of like TA said, like you can never have too much because then, and also too, like I really like having extra stock because sometimes I'll throw my book in a little free library or when I visited my sister, I like gave her two copies. Like if you find a little free library, just throw it in there, you know? And so it's kind of good to have those extra copies. And like I was able to send you my copy, Dallas, and I sent some other copies for a consignment sale that's happening in November at like a flea market. So like just it's always good to have extra because you never know like the opportunities when you can hand it out. And then you'll have that stock for future events. And maybe if something pops up and you're like, shoot, I can't go to this because I don't have any, like I got invited to this last minute and I don't have any stock.
Any books,
it helps. So I say that's a good number.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, TA, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think 40 is probably like a good number. I would say if you are ordering like 100 for the lineup events, I would put like 60, 70 in your car. And like, I'll just leave some of them in my car sometimes. And if my table starts to get really low, I'll look at my husband and be like, you got to go tote some books in for me. Like we need more. And then on what Holly was saying about like the extra books and like putting them in little free libraries, something else I will do is if I get like a damaged copy or two, I'll do like a raffle at my table and have them sign up for my newsletter. So that way you're collecting a touch point to follow up with readers. And then I'll do a raffle and give away like a free damaged copy at the end of the event. But that allows you to kind of like build a database because they say that your newsletter is the best way to actually own your followers. And like you can, that's like something could happen with Instagram, TikTok could go down, but like your newsletter, you're in control of that. So you can always get in touch with your readers that way. So I like to build that database by doing like little giveaways and things at events because it's just easy. People write down their email and be entered to win a free book at the end of the event.
That's a great idea. I love being part of author newsletters. I get the email. I'm like, oh, which author is doing, what are they doing today? And especially when you put like things in there that aren't necessarily on social media yet, I feel like I'm in a club. Yeah. What do I get to know that nobody else knows yet? I want to switch topics one more time. And I want to talk about pre-orders versus release day versus just regular like post-release sales. In the traditionally published world, as far as I understand, the pre-orders are so incredibly important because it tells the publisher like how successful your book is going to be. I don't know that I agree with that because I personally, as a reader, love to go on release day and get my book. But is that the same in the indie world? Do the pre-orders matter as much, or is it still just as relevant as release day and or post-release sales? And I don't know who would like to go first. Holly, maybe if you want to go first, since you are that kind of hybrid author as far as like having that small publishing firm.
Yeah, what do you say? I feel like, my experience would be a little different from them in terms of like how, because I'm actually not sure of that question. So I'm interested to know. But I know for pre-orders for us, like that's really important because it then tells the bookstores that there's a lot of interest. Because I think right now you can pre-order the sequel right now on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Indigo, which is in Canada, and then I think bookshop.org. But I know when like my first book came out, you could also pre-order on like Books a Million and maybe somewhere else. But so, you know, she's like, if there's a lot of pre-orders, then other bookstores will be like, okay, we'll open up pre-orders or have, you know, we'll buy all this stock. So I feel like at least that's my experience. So is the pre-orders. And obviously I don't like, for me, I'm like, I don't care when you buy the book, but my publisher cares. So
that's interesting. And even as a smaller publishing house, those numbers are still really important to them. Yeah. And so going over to TA and Rachel, does as far as like being solely independently published, does that matter to you guys?
I can't really, because this is my first release, but I will say like I research everything. Like I probably research hundreds of hours on how to publish and how to do all this stuff. And like one of the things was, if you want to be like Kindle bestseller list, if you want to be on any of these lists, you have to like get your pre-orders, because what happens is for New York Times bestseller list, your pre-orders count towards your first week of sales. And that's usually what they look at to put you on those lists. And so if you have a 6-month pre-order campaign and you can sell 2,000 books, and then your first week, it looks like you sold, you know, 2,300 books, there's a potential that you could be put high on one of those lists. And then that helps your book sales down the road, because now people are like, oh, she's the bestseller in this category or this and that. And so I think that's, for me, why trying to do pre-order campaigns was important. But I'm really terrible at it. So like, I'm terrible at marketing. So that's what I've realized in the last 6 months. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I literally did a TikTok live yesterday, and I was talking for 20 minutes, just putting together PR boxes to send out to a bunch of people that were like influencers. And after about 20 minutes, finally someone said, your mic's not working. So for 20 minutes, I just sat there and to myself and my dog who was watching me. And that's how good I am at marketing.
Hey, good on that person for saying something though.
Yeah.
Good on that.
She just happened to join us. She's like, just let you know. And I'm like,
hey girl.
Oh man. So yeah.
Oh no. Yeah. The TikTok live thing is a little wild to me. I have not done it yet because I'm worried that I'll probably do something like that. Right. I am in the comfortability of everything is pre-recorded. I'm like, we can just edit it. I can just edit it out. But if we're live, it's stuck there. It's on the internet forever. So
yes.
I love that you guys are trying and working so hard, though, to, again, push that stuff out there and get those things out to the world. What can we do as readers, as followers, as podcasters, right, who are trying to uplift indie authors? What can we do to help you and to support you and help maybe your pre-orders or things like that? I know like liking and sharing things like that, but is there something else where you're like, man, I wish that they would do XYZ or it would be so cool if my followers or my listeners or like other, not influencers, but like media, like, right, like podcasters, things like that, that we would do for you. I don't know if anyone has anything. I threw that question kind of out of the blue. So I don't know who would like to go first with that. TA, what do you think? I'm sorry, I see a look on your face.
So I think something that's like really helpful is like kind of consistency, I guess. So like for art creators that I have, like I had a select few that I sent out physical copies to, and mm-hmm. the ones that actually sit there and they post their unboxing, but then they post their reactions while reading, and then they post their reactions after reading, and then like a week later they still post about my book and like they're linking to it and everything. Things like that help like really gain that visibility of your book and will help like push pre-orders, as opposed to like, you know, when you're getting just like minimal engagement, it's still like everything helps, but like that repeated consistency, like when somebody is seeing somebody rave about a book repeated times, they actually like start to pay attention, remember the title and like add it to their TBR and everything like that. So I think things like that help. Also, like collab posts are great too, I feel like.
Yeah.
As long as they're done like tastefully and everything, I think those can be very like mutually beneficial because, okay, you know, whoever you're collabing with can gain access to like your followers, you can gain access to theirs. So it's like a mutual benefit for everybody. I mean, really just consistency of like actually putting the name out there. Like as much as you'd love to think that one time is enough, you could post the same reel with the same hook like 20 different times and you're going to be meeting new people each time you post it. So just that.
Yeah. No, I think that's all very good advice. Holly, what do you think? What is something that you, if you could like pick one thing that your followers and or readers or other media places do to help you?
Yeah, I think I like echo everything that TA said as far, because I did hear that, you know, it takes someone, I think, 8 times of seeing something before they consider buying it. So like the more visibility, the better. But also, mm-hmm. you know, because of the algorithm and Amazon rankings and things like that, like reviews are also really important. I know, like for me, I have less reviews on Amazon than I do on Goodreads. And it takes like 2 seconds to just copy paste the same thing. Or people will tell me, oh my God, I love the book so much, but then they don't leave a review. And so just those free things that you can do that like take mm-hmm. you 2 seconds, but it means so much to us because it's like, I already feel like bad. Like I'm screaming to the void. I'm like, am I going to be like, do this? You know, I feel because I'm just grateful that you read and enjoyed my book. But it's hard, you know, as an author, when it's like, we also want other people to know about it too. So I think, you know, doing those cross reviews, and yeah, kind of like TA said, the more you talk about it, then the more people will be able to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's something that we as readers maybe don't think about as much as we should, as far as like, wow, I read this book, I enjoyed this book, about going and actually leaving a review. And I think that sometimes the reviews themselves can be a little bit overwhelming because I think we as readers need to keep in mind that it doesn't have to be this long review. It doesn't have to include all the tropes. It doesn't have to include emojis and like little stars. And it doesn't have to like say quotes from the FMC and the MMC. It can literally just be, wow, I had a great time reading this book. You should also read it. Like it can be as simple as that, right? Because it's still a good review, right? A review is a review. And you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like sometimes we get a little bit like, even when I'm writing like an official Goodish Girls review on NetGalley or Goodreads or wherever I'm writing it, I feel like I'm overthinking it sometimes. But honestly, if I just went, this book was amazing in all capital letters and gave it as many stars as I want to, I think that still counts.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree, because for me as a reader as well, I don't spend a long time on my reviews and I'll be like, my gosh, this book gave me life. Can't wait for the sequel. You know, it was totally juicy, cray, you know, like I kind of give a fangirl. I'm like, I'm a fangirl of this author for life. And that's it. And it's like, I'm not even really saying anything about the book. I'm just saying how much I loved it and that I can't wait for the sequel. And I mean, you could literally write like 2 words, you know, and obviously mm-hmm. the, you know, a little more substance would be helpful, but it just anything is helpful.
Yeah. We don't have to skip making the review because we are like so scared of it. It doesn't have, you know, if you want to put a paragraph, amazing. But if you don't have that in you and you don't have the capacity to do that, that's okay too. You don't have to remember any of the details. There are some people that they read a book and they love a book and they close the book and they're like, I don't remember anything that happened, but I know I had a really good time. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
So it's okay to just be like, this was a great book. So Rachel, what are your thoughts on that?
So I just started my art campaign on the 22nd of June. So it went out to 200 people and it's like 140 have downloaded it. So that's pretty exciting. So I got 70% right now. And yeah. I think that's pretty good. I don't know. This is my first one. But and slowly the reviews are trickling in. I think it's really great because I get to see what people are thinking. And I'm hoping that, you know, everyone feels comfortable like putting the review. I didn't put any comments on my my arcs saying, please don't put any negative reviews or anything like that. I'm like, say how you feel, because that's the only way I'm going to learn, right? So like, if it's bad, yeah. if it didn't work for you, I need to know why. Like, let me know. Like, let me know why. So far it's been pretty good. And I do have the mixture of reviews in there. So I have some people that just post like, literally, I can't wait for book two. You need to put this on your TBR. And then I have other people that like will break down the story and like say which characters they hated, which characters they love, what parts of the books they really, really liked and which ones they wish were a little bit longer and all that kind of stuff. And it's great to see just like the wide like array of what people think when they're writing reviews. Mm-hmm. And it's been really fun because I was hoping that people would love the characters, and that's kind of what I've been getting. Everyone's like, I love the characters. I love this story. I can't wait for book two, and all that kind of stuff. So it's really nice to see what people think about it. And I'm hoping that the reviews will keep coming in.
So, yeah.
Because that's how it gets out there, right? That's how people look at it and they say, oh, well, 20 people said they really like this book. Like, maybe I'll like it.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And I do love, and this is me, again, not being an author in any way, shape, or form. I love that you are accepting of both reviews because I know that there's no official rule, right, as an ARC reader. But generally, as far as I have learned as an ARC reader, if you're going to post a review that isn't necessarily a positive review, or it's like some people say 3 stars or less, you know, things like that, then you wait until a couple weeks after the book is posted. So I like that you are open to all of that feedback. And I think that that's an interesting strategy. And I don't know if all authors will go that way. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's personal, like it's personal opinion, right? Your mental health matters. If yes. negative reviews are going to impact your mental health or your writing ability in any way, shape, or form, I think that's an okay stipulation to put on there.
Yeah, I just said, please don't tag me on anything, like a 2 or a 1.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just don't tag me in on social media because for my sanity. But you could put it on places where people read it because someone else might have that same opinion and not want to read the book. And I don't want people to waste their time like reading something that they wouldn't like. So
right. Exactly. TA and Holly, this is a final question before we wrap up. Do you accept, like, for as far as reviews go, would you prefer that your ARC readers are waiting to give maybe 3 stars or less, or are you wanting it all up front as well?
Put any stipulations on my ARC readers? Not even that they technically have to review the book. Obviously, reviews are what I'm hoping to get, but I never like to require that of anybody. But also something that I learned to implement in my life after my first book came out was that I don't look at my reviews. Although I will say this last one, I kind of like sneaked a peek at a few of the reviews as they started coming in. But for the most part, I really try to stay away from like my Goodreads reviews, my Amazon reviews, because when it comes down to it, reviews are for the readers. They're not necessarily for the author. Like, you can read it, but you're going to fixate on somebody's opinion of your book. And it could be like about something that you loved in the book and really felt was important to the book, and they just didn't resonate with it. So I really try to just overall avoid looking at them. And every so often I'll have like my best friend scroll through my Goodreads and like pull a few of the really good ones to like let me read. But I just try to, like, for my mental health, to just avoid it, because you like get those reviews and like that 1 star that comes in, the 2 stars, and you're just like, you didn't like my book, like, oh my gosh. And it's like, it makes you like, it just hits you, and you feel so bad, and you're like, but like, I really loved that, or like, I loved this book when I wrote it. So I really just try to stay away from reviews and just let that be just like a reader's space for them to read and review. The only thing that I ask of ARC readers is not to tag me in negative reviews, for my own mental health. And I usually have people that'll like help monitor my socials to like try to like make sure that I'm not seeing those if they do happen to tag me in a negative review. But that's kind of how I try to navigate that, because it's such a tricky little world where you're writing art and then people are rating and reviewing your art. And it's kind of like if you go to a museum, like you're not, you know, if you're looking at a piece of art, the artist is not just standing there and like reading through all of your, like listening to your feedback and being, you don't like the paint that I used. And so I'm like, I just try to really stay away from it.
I think that that's a smart choice. Holly, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's what I do. My sister goes through and, you know, pulls the positive reviews and will screenshot them, send them to me so that I can use that for book promo and marketing, like another 5-star or something. Mm-hmm. And then what I asked of her is to go through any of the more negative reviews. And if there is something that people are consistently bringing up, then let me know that, because then it's like, okay, maybe that's something I can change. Cause I'm like Rachel, it's like, oh, I want to be better if I can. You know, if there is something that kept coming up, I don't want to make that same mistake in the next book, but also that consistency, because maybe that reader just wasn't my ideal reader. That's not the person who's meant to read this book, because they say, you know, take your 5-star book or a book that you loved that you rated 5 stars and then go read all the 1-star reviews. And so I do know that it's also like reader preference. And so they're also entitled to not like my book or whatever. Obviously, you know, you want to have more good reviews. But I think that that's important in protecting your mental space. I thankfully haven't had anyone tag me in like a negative review, but I do think that that's just like for any author's mental health. I don't know who would want to be tagged in like a negative review.
Yeah.
So
a PSA to all readers, reviewers, bookstagrammers, book talkers, do not under any circumstance, and I repeat, do not tag the author in a negative review. That's silly. Don't do it. This has been absolutely incredible. I feel like I learned so many new things about the indie world that I, again, had no idea about. By the end of these indie talks, I am going to be ready to write a book. Every time I get on here, I'm like, I don't want to be an author. And then I leave and I'm like, maybe I have a lot of friends that could help me. You guys are doing this struggle so that way I can shine. Amazing. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you, ladies, for joining me. This was so much fun. For those who are listening, please make sure to like and subscribe to our channel for more Goodish Girl updates. And again, the entire month of July is dedicated solely to Indie Talk episodes. So we hope that you enjoyed. Thank you again. And I hope that you guys have so much fun at your future bookish events that hopefully we will all see you at. So thank you, ladies.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at chumbacasino.com.